Question.
All right. Let me make sure everything is good. Okay. I can. I think it's hearing me, so that's good.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. I need to write this down. But like you said, just an informal, just an informal thing, and just, you know, no pressure.
Right.
So just relax, and we'll go through questions, and we'll see what happens. This is Todd Reed. Today is March 17th, 2011. This is Rhonda Mathis, all right? And we're here just to talk a little bit about the Kentucky Alliance. Well, if you could first, you could start off just by your tell me your name and your age.
Rhonda Washington Mathis. I am 59 years old.
Okay. All right, great. All right, thank you. I'm just moving the microphone here just to make sure it doesn't fall over. Okay. Can you tell me just a little bit about your family? Are you originally from this area?
I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
I was reared in the area called Smoketown. There was, you know, original, as far as Black American or Black enclave. I was married. I'm now a widow. I've raised two daughters. One is a teacher in the Jefferson County Public School System with Conway. And my baby girl, Mikhail, she is a doctorate. She has a doctorate in physical therapy, so she's a doctor. She lives in Tennessee. Each of them went through the Jefferson County Public Schools. Well, the first one I started off in Christ the King because I didn't want her to be bused. So she went to Christ the King, and then she transferred to Brown School. And then my baby girl, they both of them attended Brown. The baby girl went to Sanders, and then she went to Mazeek in the AP program, Math Science, and had problems with that school, but she did well and went to Manual. Mm-hmm. And the oldest went to the Brown School, and she also went to Manual. Both graduated from UK, got their master's and the doctorate there.
Oh, great. Wow. All right. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Great part of the school system here. How did your family get to Louisville?
My family's from Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
And my mother and my father both. And they migrated here because my mother had an aunt that lived here it was a great aunt, and her sister was here. And so as far as when Blacks just started leaving Alabama during that time, they came here and started their family.
Did they come here for jobs or just?
First was just for a visit.
Oh, okay.
And then they, you know, got jobs and stayed.
What were they?
My mother, she worked as a nurse. She was a beautician. She worked out of home as far as fixing her. And then she was a nurse at the old General Hospital. And the reason why she ended up being a nursing assistant is because my sister went there to get a job and couldn't pass the test. And my mother said, I can pass that test. So to challenge her, she took the test and passed and got on in general.
Right.
So, and my father worked for the railroad. But both of them also, it's my understanding, they worked for, my mother did like housekeeping or something back in those days. But then she, you know, as I said, stated that beautician and nurse and just different things, vocation, because she also worked in a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so all kinds of opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, good.
But I have to say with my mother, because my mother, her siblings, and she was the seventh of eighth, and she was the one that had children, because all of my mother's sisters and brothers were teachers. I come from a family of educators on both sides.
Right.
But she was the one that chose to marry and have kids. And in fact, she had six and had a tooth tied and then had six more. I'm of the second set
of
children. So, yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. That's an interesting story. Wow. Okay, second set of six. Okay. where did you attend school?
I went to, I started off at, Nicholas Finzer. Mm-hmm. And then my brother and I failed in the second grade. He failed in the first. And so my mother transferred us to Booker T. Washington. So we attended Booker T. in Jackson Junior High School. And I went to all of my siblings, which is, except for my oldest sister and brother, we all went to Central High School. And then I lived with an aunt in New York, had the opportunity to go to like a little junior college, and they were recruiting for minority women at Marymount in Tarrytown. So I went to Marymount. I lived with my aunt in New Rochelle, who was a director of a child development center. And I worked for a while, and I went to school, and then I had the opportunity to attend, and I graduated from Marymount with a degree in sociology.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And so after sociology degree, what?
I came back home. Uh-huh. My mother was ill, and I was looking for a job, and I was a social worker. Mm-hmm. I worked with a welfare program. Back they called it the WIN program back mm-hmm. in those days, developing jobs for welfare recipients. Okay. And I really enjoyed that opportunity. Then John Y. Brown came in and just sort of cut our program, and I was laid off and ended up and coming back with the state and was working out. At that time, they had a children's psychiatric hospital. Mm-hmm. So I worked out there. I was able to transfer back into juvenile services for a while. But then I had a stroke, and then from that stroke, I was off for a long period of time and mm-hmm. tried to go back to work. It didn't work out. And I became a homemaker. Mm-hmm. So I was able to really navigate the school system with my girls to make sure that, you know, all the I's and T's and things right. were dotted with them, but also really active with the schools during that time.
Okay, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, it sounds like, well, you've had a varied career. And it sounded like when you were talking about the schools, you seem to know exactly where they needed to go. Good. While you were working here, professional career, mm-hmm. Was it a rewarding career?
It was rewarding. I like people, mm-hmm. and I enjoy the interactions and making a difference with the clients that mm-hmm. we serve. Even when I had to sometimes buck the system, you know, that was just the background that I had from my family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I enjoy that.
Okay, that's good. All right. And, that's great on background. Considering that you did get involved in some type of political activism, you know, through the Kentucky Alliance, what was the political atmosphere like in your home?
What happened was, because I was limited as far as working, but I always wanted to be involved, and I started just like volunteering in different organizations, mm-hmm. and then I volunteered at the UGMA, and it was when it started off as a neighborhood place, and that's how I met Fran, mm-hmm. and she was the one that got me involved with the Alliance. I just started attending meetings, seeing what they were doing, and all this activism, mm-hmm. especially in regards to African Americans. So I got involved socially and politically with the climate during that time.
Okay. And so was there anything like at home early on that kind of influenced you to eventually take that, or?
In fact, no. Mm-hmm. It's strangely not. Yeah. Later, you know, when I got involved, especially by my relatives coming from Birmingham, mm-hmm. then I found out that my grandfather was Reverend Shuttle. He was mm-hmm. an activist, but nobody really talked right. about it. They did things, but it was not like they sat around the table and that type of thing. I had no clue.
Okay, so yeah, so it was there, but yeah, right. yeah just not really brought up.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Well, that's interesting, yeah. I was going to ask you, the question I was going to ask is, how did you learn about politics or civil engagement? I mean, apparently it wasn't there, you know, not so much in the home. Was there anything that happened around here that you noticed, you know?
Well, back at the time, when I remember, well, it must have been about 12 when Dr. King got mm-hmm. killed, mm-hmm. you know, and then we was having the riots, okay. and I really didn't pay much attention to it because I wasn't engaged right. any type of social or NAACP or anything right. like that. It was just talking the neighborhood and hearing my parents talk about it, mm-hmm. but I wasn't engaged in any type of activities. It wasn't until I was an adult that was really became, you know, more informed mm-hmm. about issues.
Okay. So you remember when King said, yeah. you were only 12 or 13.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So as a teenager, it was
right.
probably.
Right.
Yeah, it's probably hard to get into. Yeah. It. But you were here in a little
right.
bit.
Right, but
time.
I was right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Was there any influences that you say growing up, like people that influenced you, or any specific?
The greatest influences I had in my life was my aunt I had, Elvira McLaughlin, and she had a son, but her and her husband sort of just took in all relatives. I lived with her. A number of other nieces and nephews lived in their home, and there was that volunteerism in my family, mm-hmm. that they believed in giving back, you know. So that's where I always admired the women and the men in my family, mm-hmm. as far as with family and how they gave to their community.
Is this the one that lived in New York?
Yes, okay. The aunt that I lived with, okay. in New York.
And what exactly did she do?
She was the director of a child development center, but mm-hmm. it wasn't until she passed I found out she was a Republican, and then Nixon had asked her to sit on his board in education. Mm-hmm. But she never talked politics. She was engaged in a lot of things, but it's not. She never talked about it.
Right. That is her. Yeah. There's two groups.
Yeah.
Did you say her husband, was he involved?
My husband.
Her husband.
Right. No, yeah. Uncle Joe, he was a social worker. Uh-huh. But no. Mm-mm.
Okay. All right. So, but that's a good family influence. And it sounds like they really pulled in a lot of people. And to have the opportunity to live in New York, kind of the center of everything.
Met Chisholm and a lot of great, in fact, live around the corner from Ossie Davis and Rupert Diva. Yeah, so I used to see him just standing on the corner, you know, and met his daughter and his son. So, I met a great folks in New York.
Well, that's definitely an experience.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, well, that's good. And, you know, to be able to come back and share that, that's even better. What issues or situations motivated you to get into activism? I mean, was there a specific... I know you said that as an adult, you started to notice the things.
Yeah, well, I think we was having a problem with the Klan.
Okay.
And then what's some other issues that was going on? When I was involved at that time, it just seemed like we was just constantly protesting with the police brutality, you know, and... education was always something brewing that we were taking issues with and organizing around.
Okay. Can you describe any of the things that you remember with the Klan issues?
Yeah, I remember when we organized and was on Jefferson, because my grandbaby, we must be about 3 years old, I had a picture of him on my hip.
Uh-huh.
And all these different groups coming together and talking, and then they right across the street from us in all their attire, you know. But I wasn't afraid, you know. It was good that having some people come together in Louisville, and we were saying not in my town, you know.
Right.
So.
And what year do you remember?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's I know. I have a hard time remembering yesterday sometimes. So. The police brutality.
It really got when you remember the Teller case, you know, with his handcuffs behind his back, and with the young man that the police shot in the back. So, you know, during that time, we were on the move. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that we had a lot of people as far as with job discrimination. Because when I was the chair, that I was more in the form of organizing the Kentucky Alliance with subcommittees, not just coming to meetings and talk about things, that we had actively engaged with committees working on different issues, and then bringing it back to the full board and what would we press on first, or what, you know, what was most important at that particular time. So it was, you know, remember, I just recall during that time, and then with our young people, we were really engaged with them and them getting involved, because I believe you say who I admire, I guess it would be Ella Baker. I like the way, you know, that she engaged young folks and take a back seat to be there as a guide, but not to try to take over. And that was a problem, if I say it was a problem with the Alliance, because I guess I had to be in my late 30s or so when I got involved. Okay. And I came in wanting to just listen. But when I was ready, I felt to take a leadership role. I felt that, you know, just sit here and your time would come. And I wasn't going to have that.
Right, right. Ready to get going.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Ella Baker, because I've read a lot about Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer. And it doesn't seem like when we focus on civil rights movements, we focus on Rosa Parks.
Right.
They're fantastic work. Right. But you're right, in that background role. But right. Yeah, very influential there. I wanted to come back and talk about the school situation a little bit later on, because that's really what I was focused on at the same time. Do you remember the first social issue that really just kind of grabbed hold of you, that you kind of just said, all right, I've been sitting off to the side, now it's time to get in? Or was it just kind of a mix of all those things?
It was sort of a mix of all of those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Do you remember the first real action that you took, other than, you know, the going out for against the Klan, or first things that you did? Did you protest? Did you march? Did you go to meetings?
Yeah, I went to meetings. We protested, and I went to jail, because at that time it was at PNC Bank, and they was having a meeting. It was about race relations, and they would not allow us to attend because say they was on private property, and they was having issues with Reverend Coleman. So we decided to go down there, and they called the police to have us put out of the building. And that was my first time that it was a brother. He's their craft. And he was determined we was going to stay on. He said, well, I'm ready to go to jail. So he put his hand up. I said, well, I'm going too. And we sat on the floor, and Ann Brayton, well, she's always ready to go to jail. And that was my first jail experience. But as far as, I don't know, as I recall, and my memory's not so great either, but it seemed like we was always putting out fires, and the same issues would come up, you know, in regards to trying to organize and do direct action. And we did a lot of, you know, with City Hall, with Jerry, you know, we even went to his house. And I think that it did something to him, because his son was of age and started questioning him. Mm-hmm. And he started to listen to us more, for whatever reason. But I think that the interaction we had with Reverend Coleman with the Justice Resource Center, because there was a lot of things happening, and he would pull the alliance as partners to work on, you know, different issues.
Okay. Can you describe the jail experience? It's something people have mentioned they've gone to jail. What was it like?
Well, at the time it was a couple of, because they separated the men and women, and it wasn't bad, because I had visited the jail as far as with church, missionary work. It wasn't nothing fearful, you know, about going to jail. It was but being locked up. And they're having your freedom taken away from it. That the one said door locked, you just can't walk out.
Right.
But, you know, and in fact, the officer sort of apologized. He had to lock us up. He was a nice fellow. But, and then talking to those young ladies, you know, and why they were locked up.
Okay,
and
the people.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you in?
Well, we got out maybe, let's see. Well, we got maybe 8 or 9 hours.
Okay.
That wasn't a long time.
Well, it's still, I mean, but that
jail is jail. It's jail on my jail. Record when somebody put serious to threatening or something, I think they got on
her. Right. And that means, you know, because they don't really put, you know, for
right.
so, you know.
Right.
Movement.
So, right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And when you, I just want to just clarify, you said us when they didn't want us on the property, you're talking about PNC?
The board that was holding this race relation meeting didn't want us to. It was a closed meeting, and we wanted to speak, and they wasn't allowing any speakers. And then they told us we even couldn't come upstairs. So we made an issue out. It was written up in the curriculum.
Right. And that was probably in 90, or was it?
Was it the 90s?
2000.
No, it wasn't in 2000. I think it maybe was.
Okay, yeah, I can always look it up and find the date, yeah. Let's see here. Well, let's just, you've already mentioned quite a few things about the Alliance, and just a little bit more specifics on the Alliance. Mm-hmm. I think you already mentioned it, but how did you first hear the Kentucky Alliance?
Friend Thomas got, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when she told you about it, did she describe it?
No, she invited me to a meeting, being active with the UGMA, with the neighborhood place. And she said, you would be good. We need more young people involved. So.
Okay. And was she director at the time?
She was was a fan of the director. Yeah, I believe she was a director at the time.
Yes, that would have been like probably mid-90s. Yeah. Okay, all right, so she was a director. Mm-hmm. When you actually joined the Alliance or just going to the meetings, what did you hope to achieve? What were the... Did you have an agenda in mind?
Or? I didn't have an agenda in mind. I just wanted to be... Just wanted to be involved and included with organization was about social change and making a difference in our community. Because I guess I've always, I guess you say as a race woman, concerned about issues that affect African American community.
Mm-hmm. And, well...
even though their perspective is more inclusive, but my thing, and I think Friends was as far as we concerned about what's happening with black folks.
Right. And and that's, and I'm definitely going to come back and talk about that in a little bit, because that seems to be something that caused a little bit of a split in the Alliance, and we'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, other than some of the things you described, I know you said you organized subcommittee meetings. Mm-hmm. What were some of the, what other activities did you do with the Alliance?
Oh, okay, so with the Alliance, and then when we started with the Masterminds, our youth group.
Can you describe, can you describe Masterminds? Because just that can be a sub part of.
Okay, the Masterminds, it was something that Bob Cunningham had been talking about and brought it before the board. And then eventually they got a grant to do so. But Bob really wasn't thinking about me being involved. He just wanted to be the director of the youth group. And I took exception to that because he wasn't involved with any youth or trying to attract them. So how can you want to be director of something and you're not engaged with young folks? And I've always been engaged as far as with my children and organizing things within the schools. And I particularly remember when we had a meeting, it was someone from the National, Dr. Tate, was coming to Lowell when they wanted to do something with the youth, and I brought it before the board and sort of challenged them they said, why wouldn't we have co-directors? Mm-hmm. I think they didn't want me to make a ruckus about it because, what was her name? She questioned them also in regards to the adult who wanted to be a director and wasn't really recruiting young people to be involved. What was her name? Christina, I'm Beth's friend, I won't remember her name. She lived in Chicago.
Okay, yeah.
But we ended up getting a grant and organizing the masterminds for young people to be more socially astute to what was going on.
Okay.
And
what did you do? Did you go out into
schools? Yeah, I would have to actively go out. I mean, I see kids on the corner in the library and just talk to them and just invite them to meetings and ask them not what we wanted to do, but what was their issues and what they wanted to do and what changes they would like to make in their community.
Okay. And how was the participation?
It was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they do, what were the projects?
And a lot of times they were bringing friends because, we took trips, we went to the Lorraine Hotel with King.
Okay.
We like to do a lot of social trips in regards to civil rights, going to Alabama, those type of things with them, and then give them an activity locally that's something they could do. And we would just be the backup or add resources and information for them to carry out whatever things they wanted to do at the time.
Do you, any of the things that they did? Do you remember?
I wish I kept all this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
Did they do projects with their schools? Or
no,
just...
they did more. See, because what did they? Because I know they organized, I think, was like with drugs. They organized a walk in the community in regards to Oakwood Hope and Downward Dope.
Okay.
I mean, they got that picture in the Alliance in regards to that type of thing. They did a mural on the wall as far as beautification, but what it could, look like in their community. Mm-hmm. They, what were some other activities that they used to? They wrote a play. Mm-hmm. They were interactive. It was another youth group. Oh, I can't think of her name. It was a church, and they did some things in art form as far as social activism. I can't even think of that group. They were quite active.
Good. Well, it was mainly
about 15 of them.
Okay, yeah, okay, so 15. I was going to ask, were they from just...
They would come and go. Uh-huh. But so, and a lot of their parents, I guess it was a safe place for them. They would bring them. A lot of times we had to take them home. Uh-huh. But they would bring them to be part of that.
What, were they mainly from the West End?
They were all over. They, yeah, we had some that lived in Boystown.
Okay.
They came and... primarily and locally, right here in the neighborhood, but they came from all over. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Sounds like a good program. And mm-hmm. that's the first I haven't really dug into the history, but yeah, okay. it's very good. All right. Do you remember what years you were most active in the Alliance?
No. I would have to go pull papers and
Right. So, you came in probably with Fran around the time she was in there. And then, all right. How would you summarize the mission or the goals of the Alliance? What, if you were to look at it in a big picture, what mm-hmm. were the goals of the Kentucky Alliance when you were there?
With the Alliance in regards to, the Kentucky Alliance against racism and political repression. So, you know, dealing with racism and political things that affected, I think they wanted to have a global issue, but it was more like local. Because when I was involved, we used to have a national network of alliances, and Kentucky Alliance ended up being the only one that has survived. Mm-hmm. Of all the ones they had out in all these different states, so
right. And the central headquarters is in New York.
Right.
Okay. And getting into the other parts of the Alliance, can you describe the racial makeup of members of the Alliance? I mean, it is. How would you describe the racial?
It was more African Americans because I'm trying to think. Because I mean, it was on the board. Because we had a few, Abram, I think he was Palestinian, maybe just 2% as far as other nationalities, mm-hmm. but primarily it was more African-Americans and whites. It was very, Barbara and Beverly, Barbara Powell's Beverly Mormon, mm-hmm. Tom... Maybe it was just 5 or 6.
I guess Ann.
Okay.
And just because we were asking questions about the interracial makeup, right, because it is an interracial organization, right. And so, what were some of your thoughts when to join a multiracial organization?
I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. If and again because of the Alliance as far as. Politically and socially and racial, when I was there, it was a black and white issue, and then it got broader as far as looking more mainstream and other nationalities and what they were going through. And I think maybe there was an inner turmoil within the Alliance because with the blacks there, their concern was more with what was going on with African Americans. And so maybe there was a divide at some times, so people wanted to switch off to other people came with other issues.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, and Frank kind of talked about that with the CEASE, the forming of the CEASE group,
yeah,
and how
uh-huh.
she said it was really, one really mainly African American.
It was the Alliance sort of and wanted the Alliance to be part of that. In fact, she had talked to me because I also helped form a group was. PIE, Parents Involved in Education, and uh-huh. we met at the Alliance.
Right.
And she said, my daughter was going to the manual, and I was having problems with manual in regards to my daughter with this particular physics teacher. Mm-hmm. And so she wanted to tie the Alliance in with CEASE, and Fan was against that, really. Because CEASE was all at blacks mm-hmm. involved in it. And I started off with CEASE, but sort of... was I the co-chair, I think, at that time with the Alliance and sort of got the Alliance involved with the lawsuit as far as when we was a witness in the lawsuit, the Alliance was involved as a plaintiff.
Okay,
for because the, of my daughter. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. And this was the at Manual.
Uh huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was that? What was the lawsuit all about?
It was about because at Central High, okay. Central High was had seats open for black students, but they couldn't go because they was trying to fill them with white, mm-hmm. but whites didn't want to go to Central. So we filed a lawsuit that Central was like Manual. It was what's Manual?
Magnet
School. Magnet School. Right. Okay. Right. So they had something that brought kids there to go there, and we won in that, you know, in that case, with the lawsuit.
Right. And the, yeah, because it ended the or it extended the quotas.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so that was for all magnet
schools.
And,
right.
And that's where your daughter.
Right. Okay. That's what the judge looked at.
Okay. And so.
Steve Byrne.
Okay. Yeah. And so you're and your daughter was going to Manual.
Manual.
At the time, and
right.
She was, just having problems with the school, or just...
Well, she was... Well, with my daughter, even with Mazique, she was in the honors program, but I had to file a grievance to get her into the advanced program. And when she was at Manion, she was in the advanced program, but this particular teacher, she was having problems, and everybody was dropping his class, and he chose the wrong student to mess with. And I had to go before the board and so forth. He ended up having to retire. He would have got fired. But what Ann was trying to make, what was Ann? What was her case she was trying to make? I think she was trying to make a case of it as far as the problems as a black female at a sort of elitist school mm-hmm. with Manual, with my daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ann was trying to build
your case, yeah. Okay.
And that never really materialized.
No,
okay.
No.
Because it was... You kind of took care of it internally.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and speaking of Ann, when talking about joining a racial, did you know any of Ann Brayton's history before you joined?
I didn't know anything about Ann at all. I mean, she was I wish I had learned more from Ann. Ann had so much knowledge, and Ann didn't see race. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think. I mean, later on, I used to tease her and say, "You're a benevolent racist," because we, our differences, because Ann knew the power that she had, but she wanted to micromanage people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where she had a problem maybe with Fran and I, that we wouldn't allow her to micromanage us. And because once she even told me, well, when we go to the board, I'm not for this, I'm against this. I said, well, you have your say, I might have mine, and we see which way it goes. Mm-hmm. So she could get you by yourself and say some things that sort of want to intimidate you. But Ann was, she was a great leader, a great writer, journalist, and she was compassionate about the issues and trying to make a difference in regards to race relations. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting because Fran mentioned some of the same things. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was difficult because she kind of wanted control over pretty much everything.
Right.
Yeah. But
she was a workaholic. That was her life.
Right.
You know.
Right. And, well, it's good to have people that, you know, strong people that stand up and do what you want to do.
Because in fact, I got mad at Ann. That's how I learned about Ella Baker, who was doing a training. That was something else I sort of tried to initiate with the Alliance as far as us having more trainings locally and going to like, the Highlander and things as far as the organization. And it was a film that they showed. It was Ella Baker. And Ann, I said, Ann, why didn't you ever tell me about it? And then I started researching Ella Baker. Why didn't you tell me? You knew the woman.
Yeah. she was involved with quite a few of them. Yeah. Yeah. She definitely had the history of all people in the South.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, okay. And then kind of to come to the race issue a little bit, would blacks and whites always work together on tasks, or were they separate? I mean, were... Was there any working together?
We did. When I was co-chair, we did very well as far as working together on tasks.
Mm-hmm. Any in particular issues that...
Well, especially when we was all... Let me see. I think with the police brutality mm-hmm. and with the derby, with the cruising issue, it was great. It was great work. I mean, we really matched as far as dealing with those issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned though that like the central case was all African American one side.
With Cease was
with Cease.
Right.
Do you, is there any reason why, you know, on some issues there was a lot of...
Well, Cease, now, Cease was a group of African Americans who was dealing with Central, and primarily most of them was alumni of Central. Uh-huh. And so they didn't see a need for the Alliance trying to get involved with that at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was...
And Fran felt this is just more or less a... Well, she said, and a white woman want to jump on board. That's, uh-huh. That was her take on it.
Okay.
But I ain't have any problem.
Okay. All right. And so it was, yeah, because I was just wondering if it was mainly just because it was an issue
Mm-mm.
in one community. And okay.
Mm-mm.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad mm-hmm. to hear that there were other mm-hmm. situations. What was the, how involved with the Derby, the cruising issue was the Alliance? I mean, what?
Oh, Mr. How did we get involved with it? Did somebody talk to us? We start going to meetings, and we started having press conferences,
uh-huh.
and with the police, and we got involved because I think I got a picture up there with our Derby shirts, and we would also cruise the neighborhood, monitor, walk the streets, and
uh-huh.
Report back. We thought police were out of line with the community at that time, because it was like we were just closed in, the helicopters, the police, and they were not respectful. They thought it was funny, cutting the young folks off, the ones who were, I understand their rationale for some of them were out of line and what they were doing, but the way they handled the whole situation, it was just, they were just closing down the West End and taking out monies that could be gained in the community with the people who were trying to make something on Derby. Because, in fact, we marched up here on 4th Street every Derby when Reverend Coleman was alive, and Dick Gregory. And we talk about as far as different social issues that was going on economically, education, all these different things was going on in Louisville, Kentucky, across the state. And we have a lot of people, you know, involved in that, in speaking and involved in that process. I mean, for me, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I was a protester.
Right. And that's a big issue. I mean, it was a big event. And
right. That was our Derby, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. Well, that's good, because that's the first I'd heard about the Derby, you know, mm-hmm. cruising issue, and I mean, you've just mentioned a couple. I was going to ask what major issues were involved in when the mm-hmm. with the Alliance,
mm-hmm.
Police brutality. Other than what were some of the steps the Alliance took?
To
attack that or to
attack that, because we actually had what was the people. People, we had a subcommittee just dealt with, I think Kirk Owens was a chair, just dealt with police issues,
mm-hmm.
and where people would come and write it up and do the research. And we was trying to organize a group of lawyers just to deal with different issues that came before us, and the way people could work on to be advocates for them. And in the community, we had forums where at that time we said the police can't police themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we was doing the policing in the community and having people come to us, and we would write it up and then submit it. Who did we submit it to? Well, to the chief. This is our findings. And this is your findings, and where we could even go somewhere else with it.
Mm-hmm. How so, were they receptive when you went?
No, they didn't want to hear it.
Right. How did I mean, from when you were there, did anything get better, or did it just kind of stagnate?
Well, sometimes, because we had to call in the FBI mm-hmm. in some cases, and something, it did get better, because I think they took us seriously, and then we would go that extra mile. We was just was, I guess, like little fleas on them. Was an irritant.
Right. I mean, you have to respond to it.
Yeah.
You can't just let it go. You scratch it. You know,
right.
Well, that's good. Would you say there were any major victories when you were with the Alliance? Any things that specifically happened? Or?
I wish I could wrote some of this stuff down myself. Uh-huh. We did have some, especially in job cases where people were fired, because mm-hmm. we had that subcommittee, and we were able to get jobs back, or one cases when they went to with the human relations or somewhere else, and they sort of blowed them off, or they didn't get the we felt the best results. We was able to make changes within the job place, you know, changes with JCPS in regards to how they handled suspensions. Yeah, we were involved in just a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Who was in the job cases? Was there anybody that? I mean, when I talked to Maddie Jones, she mentioned a lot that she actually did some of the litigating. I mean, she was out trying to work on job cases at one time, you know, working for people that lost their job.
Yeah.
Were there a group of people, or was it just kind of the alliance in general?
It was we had a group of subcommittees specifically worked on those cases, and then we'll bring them back before the board and how they would get them alleviated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we had people that, you know, went on job sites and, yeah.
Just wide ranging. You know, yeah. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things. Okay. Yeah. Well, if we could, we'll take a little time and talk a little bit about school school situation. Mm-hmm. And just kind of back, you'd mentioned your children. You didn't want them to be bused early on. Mm-hmm. Before anything that you were involved with in the alliance and the central case and all that stuff, what was your opinion of the school system with the assignment plan, you know, busing? Why were you against, you know, certain parts? Or just if you could tell me your opinion on it when you were here.
I mean, because I always valued education, and I wanted to always have the best education that for my children. And at that time, bus for me, I just didn't want my children to be bused way out somewhere when they had perfectly good schools right in the neighborhood. And so it's that's why we chose to send my first one to a private, the Catholic school, and it was a great education there. But once I learned the ropes as far as the process, as far as getting my second one in, because with Brown School was open school and they took in siblings, and I just liked the makeup of the Brown School. The student assignment plan, I just felt that, you know, African American children were just taking the blunt of going so far to get an education, and that more resources should have been put in the neighborhoods to build up the school. So I wasn't a great proponent of the student assignment plan of busing. And I felt that maybe they should have bused the teachers more so than busing the kids. But I think in the long run, because of the experience my children did have with a cross section of nationalities, that it was good in that sense. I know a lot of people made a big thing. My child don't have to sit to a white child to learn. But I think it's important that all children learn about everybody. And that's what I think busing did bring to the table in regards to, you know, the student assignment plan. And kids, I think, was more of a problem with adults than, you know, with students.
That's an interesting perspective. Yeah, that's a good, I like that perspective, yeah. And I was going to ask you about that because the goal of busing was integration. Mm-hmm. And so you said that, you know, you did that. But let me just take it back to the Brown School. How did they get into the Brown School? Do they have to apply for that?
Yeah, you had to apply for it. Let me see, how did...
Because if they weren't in the Brown School, where do you know where they would have...
Let me see, Lauren, she would have went to Tully. Mm-hmm. Some, I don't know. I didn't care because I know she wasn't going.
Right.
Some far away school.
Okay.
And so, but because she was coming from like a private school, and her score, where her grades and things were great, and I always kept a dossier on her, you know, on her schoolwork. And I went to the principal. It was an open house, and she got in.
Okay.
So, and that was the same thing with my, because she was there, I had no problem with my second child.
Okay. All right. So there was some type of application. I mean,
yeah, you had to apply. Yeah. Okay. And why? Had to do an essay and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what age? What grade did she go into?
Romulan went to the Brown School, let me see, in the fourth. She went to Christ the King till she was third. She went to the Brown School when she was in the fourth grade.
Fourth. And then from there, manual?
She was from there, manual. She had to apply to get a manual. But she was an art.
Okay.
So she had to submit her art work and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, that's a good explanation of why not to go out that far. But did you get involved in the central case at all, other than, I mean, I know you had your issue with Manuel and that, but were you...
No, I was with the group, with Cease, with Fran, Bob Douglas, Carmen Weathers, Deborah Starworth, and myself, and Shelby Lanier was the group that as far as filing the case, and we had forums and meetings to identify parents who wanted to go to Central and was denied. That's how their case came about with Central.
Okay, and can you let's take it a step back. What were the initial reasons for the forming Cease? I mean, Cease is very important.
Because there was so many parents were saying that they wanted, well, because most of us who were Central alumni and knowing somebody was always saying that, well, I want my child to go to Central, but they can't get in. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to go anywhere else. And so, you know, we just got to talking and found the attorney and filed the case.
Is the attorney
Teddy Gordon.
Okay.
Because in fact, we tried to go with what's his name? He was a black. In fact, we met with him. No, the Alliance met with him. Mm-hmm. Auburn Williams was an attorney for the Alliance.
Okay.
We were meeting with Aubrey.
Oh, okay.
But Cease Aubrey was meeting with Teddy.
Okay. And Fran mentioned something that Teddy Gordon was a little reluctant to take.
Right.
At the beginning. Do you remember why he was...
He thought it couldn't be... it was a case that it couldn't be won.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why? I mean,
he just thought that the school board just had more power with the attorneys and that it was just a waste of time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then eventually he did take it.
Right.
I mean, did he ever say what... Why he just...
I guess he came to the conclusion he had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And if he won, he had something to gain. He
right,
had,
exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, and so can you describe did you go to any of
to the cases set in, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that went from... It went from Jefferson County...
To the Supreme on 6 and... We was going down to the... What's that building on 6th Street? The federal building.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And how was that? What was the experience like to be?
Just sitting here and just hearing testimony.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the parents and their passion and why, and then because you really couldn't read the judge, you didn't know which way he was going, and hearing the lawyers testify from the school board and why they sort of wanted to maintain what it was. But the big thing was, as far as with Central also being a magnet like Manuel, and that was really broke the case open, that they had something like Manuel had as far as specific with their curriculum that students wanted to go to.
All right, so that's...
So, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, why have empty chairs there when you have students that want to occupy them?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then what did you think about when the case did go?
It was jubilation, you know. It was great.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And now, you know, one of the things that was mentioned in the papers about the Central case is that it was going to open up the door for all kinds of challenges. And there was the McFarland challenge, and there was the Meredith case.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved in any of those issues?
No,
or?
No.
Okay, but what do you think? Because basically, you know, those cases really changed. I mean, the assignment plan was basically thrown out.
Thrown out.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the system now? Because more based on, you know, socioeconomic issues, the magnet schools are still open to things. What do you think it helped? Do you think it hurt in the long run? What?
You know, as far as hurting or helping or hurting, it seemed like it has, I don't know, it seemed like we're just always starting back off to square one again, and it's hurting the kids. With the student assignment plan, I mean, because first, I think we got bigger numbers. It was at 15-50 ratio, and then I think it was 80.
Yeah, 80.
It was 20, and now, you know, I think as far as with choice, that parents really don't get true choice. And so I don't know, it's new thing, I think, that European Americans have caught on to what black folks was, and now they're taking advantage of it as far as getting their child a school of choice in their own neighborhoods. And I don't know how it's going to be a backlash for the African Americans, because now we really don't have neighborhood schools. And they keep saying we want to go back to neighborhood schools when really they've closed them down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what, and then now they're talking about more charter schools. But my issue is, how can we deal with what we already have? How can we make all our schools, as far as, I know we got traditional, magnet, all these different schools, all up to par. I don't care where a child goes. So I'm glad I don't have children in school.
Right. It's a difficult option, because really they just had the vote. I believe the analyst came in not too long ago and said, you know, that the community still supports the busing program.
Uh-huh.
Your response to that, if looking at, let's say, the larger African American community in general, do you think they still support the busing plan, or would they go for more neighborhood schools? I mean, what?
Well, you have the NAACP still support the busing plan, mm-hmm. because they feel as though their kids will lose out, because it's still their mainstay that those schools, and you have more affluent parents in them, they're going to get more bang for the buck. If you return to neighborhood schools, we're going to go back to segregation and have less resources. And then as far as students, their interaction that they have will be lost. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Okay, yeah, and that's the question. Yeah. Some people have mentioned, you know, some people that I've interviewed have talked about neighborhood schools. They want to go back because mm-hmm. it would build that stronger sense of community, because that was lost with the busing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a positive, or do you see that as happening if they went back to neighborhood schools, or would it be more flawed because it would take away from that influence?
I think it would be more flawed,
mm-hmm.
to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Just because of the
times we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're kind of on the more of the, I guess, I don't know. It's a really tough
complex
question.
Complex.
Yeah, because you see some of the benefits. Like when I talked to Maddie Jones, mm-hmm. she wanted to build up the West End, and she mm-hmm. believed that, you know, they've lost
right,
that community.
Right. She believed in neighborhoods. Right. But you see the capacity and the conditions of these neighborhood schools,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah, if they're going in and doing something, that, but I don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what do you think about Central High School? I mean, Central is still...
Central is the only historical black school that we have. All these different black schools that we used to have in this community, I was surprised once they named them all. I wasn't aware of some of these schools that we had, and they're gone.
Right.
If you know. So what are the kids coming back to? We have to, I guess, focus on more as far as teachers' attitudes, the long run as far as the best qualified teachers that we have in our system, working more after school, prepare more preventative things with students to help prepare them for our community, for our future leaders. They're gonna be taking care of us, so we, you know, it's a hard job, and it's just the times that we're living in, as far as socially and economically, it's just hard, you know, for us as a people.
All right. Well, and okay, so that's good. And to kind of piggyback on that, in terms of the whole idea that, you know, you spent quite a bit of time in the Alliance, you created Masterminds program, you're working on that. What is there anything that you can say that could help, you know, the city of Louisville? What do you see that, you know, there's a new mayor in town? There, you know, what suggestions would you offer to?
As far as better race relations and economically, I know Fisher thing is we need more jobs. We need to create more jobs. But, you know, business run JCPS. And as far as with jobs, create jobs, we have too many people as far as here in the West End. Lack of education, lack of finances, job training, deteriorating housing. We have beautiful stock, but they're not rehabbing them. I mean, you go on Boys Town Road, you go to all these other areas, and I realize people have put their money, but they get money even with other nationalities can come here from somewhere else and get tax credits and all of this, where black folks can't, you know, in the West End. As far as when ex-offenders come back home here and they can't get jobs because they are felons, but you don't have a business community trying to work with these entities to make a difference. So with job training, with now what our young people, summer jobs is great, but that's a year-round, you know, some type of model incubator for that. Even when they built Duval, and they were promised a strip mall with, you know, anchor store, none of those came to fruition, and they wonder why, you know, black folks are so frustrated with the status quo. Yeah, you say you for integration, you say that we need better race relations, but we don't see it happening.
Right, that's true. And what, I mean, I agree 100%. I think that when I was driving through the neighborhoods, I think there's some beautiful homes, mm-hmm. there's some, you know, fantastic places, and what do you think they can do? Is there any solution to it that that the city can do? Or I know some people have said, you know, they spend a whole lot on downtown, you know, can mm-hmm.
Some of the money they sit on downtown, they can invest in the West End. We got all these dilapidated, you go down Broadway. Broadway should be a thoroughfare from Boys Town to Shawnee Port. But we get the crumbs, not even the crumbs, you know, from down here. I mean, I've met Fisher. He talks, you know, with a great vision but I don't know. The proof is in the pudding. And we went through, everybody thought Jerry Abelson was the savior, you know, and that didn't happen. He really didn't invest into the West End until it was kissing babies and shaking hands on election time.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's like a third world country down here. It's sad, mm-hmm. because it could be so much more. And we have so much talent. As far as economically, but you know what saddens me even now, you go to any store around here, none of them are African American. They, you know, Arabs, and they don't give back. They come and take, but they don't reinvest in the community. So what can happen to make changes with that? It's, you know, families that even when they don't want to even buy homes down here. So it's always been, you know, as far as being redlined, mm-hmm. because nobody sees the value in investing in the West End.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, are you still active in the Alliance? Do you still?
When issues, you know, come up, I'll just share with, like, we have this, and I just emailed Tom, and he wasn't aware of the central issue. Well, this is not really central, or something like this. I mean, there's some things that I guess is just in me. It should come up, and they'll call me to attend a meeting, and I go. I'm not very active because the structure of the Alliance is taking them more, I guess, cerebral, want to talk about things, mm-hmm. but not really. And I believe what was his name, Whitney Young, you need somebody in the boardroom, but you also need somebody protesting or demonstrating to bring the attention to what the issue is and let the common folks know what's going on. So they less not in a protest and demonstration type move or even have subcommittees. I guess maybe it's a passage of time. People have gotten older, died off, and you haven't prepared the young folks to take their leadership role, and that's what happened with the Alliance. They didn't take advantage of the young folks who were involved, who were passionate to be the leaders of the next generation. They sort of die off, like Reverend Coleman, die off, and the dream dies, you know. And people now say, I don't have time for all that, and I'm not going to get paid. You don't get paid to be an activist, you know. Right. It's a passion that you have for the issue, for the people, for the neighborhood, for the community, and that you want to make a difference where you are. So I'm not engaged. In fact, now they got the Black Caucus. I'm not as engaged as in Alliance as I once was. If they, you know, call me and it's a particular interest issue, you know, I may go and lend my voice or my opinion, but not like I was back then when I was really going 24/7. In fact, even my daughter once told me, my oldest, she told me after my husband passed, and I was telling her, we need to get closer, we need to do things. She said, Mama, I don't have time. I got my own family, and you wasn't there for me. You was out protesting somewhere.
Yeah, and that was for her benefit at some point. Yeah. Yeah. And how old is she now? Is
she's 33, 32.
Right. Does she live here?
She's okay. Over in Duval. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm 32. So, yeah, I understand. Yeah. And that's actually an interesting question that I didn't think about when I was putting these together. What was the age group? Like, when you were in the Alliance, were there any, other than, like, the Masterminds, the youth group, were there any younger generations? Or
well, we had college. A couple of college students, on their way to college, and they was from from elementary, middle school, high school, and college, with the youth, with the mastermind. As far as my age, because I had to be I guess it ranged from like maybe late 30s, maybe it was the 40s and up to the 80s. So it was a growth stage as far as intergenerational age. Wise, it was a good mix in the Alliance. I'm sorry, because we still need a Alliance. We still need like a Justice Resource Center, and they sort of faded away, and I don't see it coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, in the prosperity that it was and what we were doing back then, and we still need those type of organizations. In fact, we try to get the NAACP involved in something. They said they got to check with the national. We didn't have to check with nobody. Right. We just did the work, you know, and did what needed to be done.
Right, and unfortunately, hopefully it won't take a horrible issue, you know, another police issue or something like that, because I think that's what gets people motivated.
Right.
You don't want that to happen.
Right. But I guess you're right about that, because I guess at that time, it was a lot of going, it was no accountability.
Right.
So we brought.
And it seemed like every now and then there was something.
Right.
Well, just kind of a final question. Is there anything you'd like to tell me or talk about that you haven't had the opportunity yet, or any issues or thoughts on the Alliance? Or
well, at the time that I was with the Alliance, and I think I made a difference. I think my leadership role made a difference. With the Alliance, I would say that if there are other groups are trying to store it off, that I wish that the elders would listen to the young people and groom them to pass the torch and not wait till they die and want to pass the torch. The difference, I enjoyed my interpersonal relationships with everybody, you know, with the Alliance. I learned from, folks with Ann, because just listening to her and how she could manipulate or move people or get the issues out there. I think from reading from different groups, even with Ann, it was unfortunate. I don't know if with Fran, like with Alice, and she was like our coordinator, and that's why I really left the Alliance, because I saw my role as chair was being not subservient, but undermined. Right.
Diminished, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And it was Alice.
Wade, and she Wade. Was the okay. coordinator, and she would, Ann was, she could always go to Ann, and when I tried to put things in place as far as an organization or give her even a suspension or something like that, she run to Ann, and nothing would happen, you know, with the boy. But when Ann passed, the first thing they did was fire, and that may not be the case because we was building up. I was telling, used to tell Ann, the organization is bigger than us personally. We talking about a movement. And unfortunately, I found out with a lot of movements, with this interpersonal clashes you have within an organization, and you trying to make for a better world, it's sad, mm-hmm. you know. With most of your social, you know, justice organization. And in a conflict, you know, just tears it down.
Right.
And it's sad. Maybe, I don't think we're going to get to a place that we don't need them.
Right.
Because it's always going to be somebody need to stir the pot, to hold somebody accountable, and not be protesting per se, but something, someone to say this is not right and to speak out against it, mm-hmm. or else you're going to have the status quo taken over, and we don't want that in our society. Mm-hmm.
Is there, and just thinking about that, just listening to what you're saying, it really, and maybe it was because Ann micromanaging, maybe that was why, not really training so much
right.
the youth, but trying to do her part so much,
that
may have hurt in the long run.
Right, right. Constantly training people and preparing them. I mean, it was sad because even Ann, I wish I kept the letter. Ann wrote a letter. Even Alice wrote a letter along, and they said Ann cried when I left. But when I threw up my hands, when I make up my mind, enough is enough, mm-hmm. you know. And
that was just, I mean, when you left, it was, what was it?
It was an issue. It was something we had organized and was something I needed Alice to do. And I was just tired of her running to Ann about it, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. So there were kind of favorites. And I wouldn't say favorite. I mean, but it was hard to.
Yeah, it was hard because she didn't respect my position, mm-hmm. and she thought Ann is the one. You know, I'll have to deal with you.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Well, that explains. Fran was talking about the same basic issue. So.
Yeah.
And just one thing, I've also heard this a couple times, and just one final thing. I've heard mentioned so many times in the African American community that it needs to organize to get something to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And someone else I mentioned that one of the problems with the school desegregation plan is it pulled the community apart.
Mm-hmm.
It divided and conquered, really, mm-hmm. because there was no unity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any way that the West End itself, you know, that's struggling could, do you think that they, if they could unify and instead of just individuals here and there.
And that's what it's going to take, a unification of people coming together. But I guess it's going to be hard to be on one accord with that.
Right. Is there any, I was just trying to think of a way that, you know, as one voice, as one thing, you know, to make this, you know, a bigger organization to fight for that, you know, that renovation that would be needed. So, but it's hard because there are individuals and,
ego.
Right, yeah, ego. And then when you get together, you see what happened, you know, you're saying with the Alliance. There mm-hmm. is that interpersonal thing. So
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
the ideas are there. It's just hard to get it all
right,
organized.
Right.
And I think that's hard, especially when you're not getting paid for, you know, activism and
mm-hmm.
whatnot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because as I stated before, like with Du Bois, you know, the talented 10th,
mm-hmm.
and then the common person coming together. Because they're the experts in what they do in their community, and you have that at knowledge at school base, but you're not street smart.
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
Right. And I think the history, what we're talking about, shows that through the way that CEASE worked
mm-hmm.
is because a group got together and they pushed for it.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just one person. Just,
right.
You know,
but the problem is mm-hmm. we come together and with an issue, all the things I've been involved with, even with parents involved in education, and I'm of the mindset you're always trying to train somebody else to do it. and not for you to be the person only with the knowledge, only person doing it. In fact, it's better for you, because I, you know, to be in the background, because when you out there, it's best for them not to know who's really pulling the strings. Mm-hmm. You know, you the one that know what's going on. They don't know that. But with us, we have a problem with people wanting to be up front, wanting to be in the limelight. I'm the voice. I'm the leader, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not the person that the community really recognize, but you're setting yourself up. And so the outside people who know that set up their own leader in the community. And it's sad, because we'll work on and have a victory and not stay together, and we'll fall apart and then want to come together again and then lose that relationship or that camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And so you constantly come together, then people just get tired and say, I'm tired. I ain't got time for that.
Right. And when you put yourself as a leader, you get attacked all the time,
right,
too.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
And it wears you down.
Right, yeah. Right.
When it could be a group.
Right,
taken.
A group. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. I mean, it really explains a lot, and it really helps to understand, you know, group dynamics and, mm-hmm. and how to get things done.
Yeah.
Or what not to do in,
right,
you know, a lot of,
right,
cases.
Right, right.
And so,
right,
we can learn from that.
Right. And, I hope so. I hope, yeah, somebody read it and say, well, yeah, this is what we, I mean, nothing's going to ever be perfect, but you can build a better mousetrap.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. There's always a better way. Yeah. Yeah. And you learn from what's worked and what hasn't.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, anything else that you might say, or?
I don't know. Can you think of anything that you...
No,
Did you ask all the
major questions?
I wish I had kept more and started writing down more of my, yeah, own self, well, for my own grandchild.
Yeah, well, and you know what? And I'll give you a copy of this. I'll send a copy of I'll send on a CD to you. And it'll be an audio file that you can play and you can keep. And if you can download it or whatever. And like you said, it'll be at the U of L archives.
Oh, okay.
It's always going to be on file there.
Oh,
so,
okay.
It's hard to think about these things without, you know, mm-hmm. when you first hear the questions, mm-hmm. without being able to prepare for, mm-hmm. what they,
right,
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, you know, and if you do think about them, you know, write them down and we'll. And,
well, I hope y'all had a pictorial to that. You're doing the oral, uh-huh. but it's all the different ones you interviewed, because somebody's going to go back and say, I wonder what that person looked like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we definitely will. And yeah. I actually have a friend that's a photographer. We'll see what,
okay,
I can do. Yeah, he works for the New Albany Tribune. So
okay.
We'll see it.
Okay.
See if I can add that aspect.
Because it's interesting as I talked to you, because I didn't know, well, Tom called me, but I called Fran, mm-hmm. just to see if she wanted to be, because nobody told anybody else was being interviewed. Was,
right.
That interesting.
Well, see, they gave us a big list of,
okay,
people, and so.
But I'm just talking about in the social, I'm just curious like that. Even so, I'm just saying that Tom called me, but I called Fran, but with Fran, Maddie, all of us are in this same kind of network where,
yeah,
nobody's telling anybody. Like, they may think they're the only one being interviewed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and yeah, and we basically, I'll tell you how the process worked for us. It was just, you know, that we actually are doing two groups in this. It's the, mm-hmm. the Kentucky Alliance and the KCLU, the Kentucky, mm-hmm. Civil Liberties,
uh-huh.
Union, and like half of us are interviewing,
okay,
people from there, and,
okay,
and we had lists, and we basically, they, when Tom put together the list, it,
mm-hmm.
was what issues they were involved in,
mm-hmm.
and I particularly was interested in school issues, because,
okay,
I'm a teacher, and I,
okay,
actually, my thesis I'm working,
okay,
on is about really the 1980s and 1990s,
okay,
with school desegregation,
okay,
because there's not a whole lot about that.
Okay.
And so when I was looking for people that were involved,
okay,
with the school issues,
okay,
and then, you know.
So what are the other feedback as far as with the DSEG case, or before DSEG?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, it's been interesting to hear, like, Fran made a comment about, you know, all we wanted was the equality. Once,
mm-hmm.
once the schools were being funded equally,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't care if, you know, if it was people were bused here and,
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And she really wasn't sure what she wanted in terms of, like, neighborhood schools,
mm-hmm.
or busing, because you don't want the funding to end, like,
right,
kind of like you were saying.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, she really hadn't thought about it.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, Maddie, on the other hand, was very much neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
school. She,
mm-hmm.
was completely against the busing,
mm-hmm.
and that was. But actually, you know, Fran talked about that too, with,
mm-hmm.
when she had to go and speak after Lyman T. Johnson, you know, who he was very much for integration, and, you know, and she had to speak against that because yeah, with the central case. So I heard a lot, heard a lot about that. And,
but see, my daughter's with the integration because I grew up in segregated. So my relations with white folks wasn't there. Was there was more broader.
Okay.
And I think it helped them socially, networking, you know. So I saw that, you know, and knowing how to take advantage of it. Some people get in those situations and don't take advantage of it. So I was, you know, but Brown School was different.
Right.
So, you know.
Right, and that was, you know, yeah, so it's not, yeah, but it's still the same idea,
yeah.
I mean, to have mixed races instead of one
But specific. But the people, their mindset at Brown was more utopia type anyway, so.
And how did, well, I mean, you said you were at a segregated school, you didn't have, how did you develop your relationship where, with other races?
Or whatever.
It's, was it just job
just,
or school?
It's just job, you just... Okay. Had to, but for some people, say, oh, I got a black friend. I don't have no. You say best friend, white friend,
Yeah.
I know folks in a personal, you know, as far as working relationship or acquaintance, but no,
yeah,
I never just, really.
Just in, yeah, and just in general, yeah, okay. I know you said something about working sort of social justice work here. Do you happen to know Kevin Sin by any chance?
Kevin who?
Kevin Sin, a little short guy. He's a friend of my family. He was in social justice for our social service or social work.
Okay.
Social worker. He was a social worker here for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, he was just. I just. That's when I grew up. I knew he was there, and he just retired.
So, what high school did you go to?
I'm from New Albany. I was born in New Albany, and I went to Providence High School. It's Catholic school. My mom's a teacher. I'm a teacher. I've taught now for 10 years at Clarksville Middle School and High School. So public school over there. So so I'm at least on that side. So I don't. But
really?
I have some friends that are in JCPS.
Okay.
And I'm actually a teacher at IUS.
Okay.
I teach teachers.
So what do they think about JCPS?
You know, it's really interesting. I had a student this semester in my college class. His name was Joseph Harris. He's actually doing student teaching at Central.
Oh.
And he wanted to student teach at Central, and IUS was somewhat against it. And they were against it because they didn't, you know, I hate to throw them under the bus, but they just... they don't know anything about Central, and they don't. I think they thought he would be intimidated in somehow, some way. But he actually—he's an African American male, and he actually gave up his career as an umpire. He was a baseball umpire, made
good
really
money.
Good money. He gave it up because he wanted to
go
help the community.
Right.
He bought a house out here in the West End. He moved here from Cincinnati. And he wants to make a difference, and he wants to be at Central. And they told him, "Well, we don't want to, you know, scare you off the out of it." And he was like, "Scare me off?
Right.
You know, this is what I want to do."
Right, right.
And so he and I talked a lot about this because he has major problems with the IUS system, and I mean, granted, IUS, I think he was telling me the racial makeup is only, you know, 6% African American in the whole school. And to be honest, in all my years at IUS, I think I've only had 2 African-American students that are going into social studies education. But yeah, they generally shy away from Louisville schools, Jefferson County. But I had one that was going to be at Mazeek, one student teacher, and then Joseph at Central.
So you know, he's up here in all his melee at Central with the case with the principal and the reparation, teacher wouldn't file a grievance. Because, I wouldn't spoke before the board. I was there when it happened.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so, because I, you know, go sit in on classes, and I used to be the judge with Ricardo X when he had Liberation Boat every year. And so it's...
So, can you... I haven't had a chance to talk to him.
Here,
I only heard about it through the news, and I only caught half the story because I can't really tell what's going on.
And this one white teacher, complained about the principal for them, and they do it every year. They just made an announcement. I think the kids did a rap in regards to reparation.
Right.
And he was offended. And
the student was offended.
White male teacher was offended. And he complained about it, and in turn, the principal sent out a letter,
right,
and was saying that he apologized. He didn't believe in reparation. The kids did a civil disobedience. I mean, civil, not disobedience, civil disobedience in the hallways, in between classes. Right, yeah. And he called the teacher in, Ricardo. He just came just to see what was going on with the kids. He called him to his office and asked him, you know, we in testing and what's going on. And Ricardo, you know, was like, you know, why you call me? He said, my ass, and you want to lose your damn job. And
wow. So
it's a big mess. But, you know, I'm proud of those kids that spoke for Mr. X, and one who's graduated from Xavier,
mm-hmm,
came to speak. Because they value the Black History Program.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. X is passionate. He thinks out of the box with those young people. He's making a difference for them to think critically, mastering the subject. And some of those teachers up there need to be reassigned, because some of them just don't want to deal with African-American students.
Right.
You
right.
know.
And they were.
And, yeah. And it's their attitude. It's a, you know, talking about the achievement gap. We have an attitude gap. You know, with some for some teachers,
right.
And if they don't, if those are the type of children, they need not be in that school building, period. You know, some are probably not even be in the profession.
Yeah.
You know, they lost a job or wanted a change, and they come into education. It was one, you know, when I came up, you looked up to your teacher, and that was something else to be a teacher. You know, that's I admire anyone who goes into, because you're underpaid. You know. And it's and whoever, I don't care what profession you go into, you had to have a teacher, you know, and they don't get the respect that they deserve as far as teaching. But then we come in, we got a whole different type of caliber of student coming into the school setting, and for some of them are just not equipped with the problems some of these kids come with. Besides teaching them, you got to be a teacher, a social worker, a mom and pop. And some of them say, I'm not their mom, I ain't their daddy.
Right.
If they don't get it, you know, it's not on me type right. attitude where you shouldn't be in that field, you
right.
know.
Now, do you know, I never asked Joseph, what's the racial makeup of teachers in the
It's Central? 50%, I think it's 50, it's 50% African-American, 50% white teachers up there.
Okay. And okay, yeah, it's really interesting, because I, after talking to Joseph and
mm-hmm.
doing all this work with
mm-hmm.
you know the Alliance and civil rights movements,
mm-hmm.
I mean I'm at my breaking point with the school that I'm at. I've been
mm-hmm.
there for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a struggle with our administration.
Mm-hmm.
And all they care about tests,
mm-hmm.
tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely
mm-hmm.
love doing things,
mm-hmm.
social justice work,
mm-hmm.
and I've really pondered whether, you know, I should, you know, apply, you know,
mm-hmm.
at a central
mm-hmm.
type situation,
mm-hmm.
because, you know,
please do.
Yeah, you know, I would really enjoy it. I think I really enjoy
mm-hmm.
it, because, you know, while at some point, you know, in
mm-hmm.
some ways I'm a little nervous about it,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know how it'd be, you know, accepted right
mm-hmm.
off the bat, but I think that I have extensive
if you're
knowledge
passionate
of it. Yeah.
And you forthright, you have integrity, and you have the students,
respect, yeah.
You will get respect,
yeah.
regardless of color.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I'm just passionate. I mean, I think it's what I teach 7th grade
mm-hmm.
world history at
mm-hmm.
Clarksville, and it's mainly history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I always sneak in my civil rights
yeah.
documentaries and,
uh-huh.
and moments and have.
But why
program.
Should you have to sneak it
right.
in?
Because it's not in the curriculum. It's
yeah,
not in the standards.
But and that's part of the problem.
Exactly. And so, but you know, like when I was covering, you know, I covered Nelson Mandela,
uh-huh.
Gandhi, and
uh-huh.
like, but you know what? We could tie in Martin Luther King.
Uh-huh.
You know, the nonviolence.
Uh-huh.
And, so we and our kids really enjoy that,
uh-huh.
and we don't get enough of
uh-huh.
it. And you know, I showed the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Cicely Tyson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the kids
yeah.
love it,
yeah.
even though it is a
yeah.
fictional story.
Yeah.
I mean, they from 1974, I think,
uh-huh.
is the movie. But
uh-huh.
my kids were just glued
uh-huh.
to the screen.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah.
yeah,
roots, the whole type of thing.
Yeah.
But like one of the students said, but I don't want you to sugarcoat my history, you know, my history. They want to, you know, the Middle Passage. They don't want to talk about the hurt and the pain.
Mm-hmm.
No, your you feel as though that was my descendants. It wasn't me. But we're just saying some accountability that it happened. The Japanese, the Jews, they're not going to let you forget, you know.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't.
Well, it's good. I like hearing from people that are parents, and just I've talked to so many that go to Central and sit mm-hmm. in the classrooms, and mm-hmm. I think it's great. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's the beginning of that building of the community mm-hmm. and making mm-hmm. sure some positive things happen. But yeah, I definitely heard about this, and mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, it was great. I guess I hope you get what you
Yeah, wanted. Yeah, I'm good. I'll go ahead and...